B-Rabbit can only manage to win the weekly battle rap competition, then he'll finally be able to... Wait, what was on the line here again? Was there a prize of some kind? Actually, this whole thing seems kind of overblown. Anyway, 8 Mile was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name is Sean Collier, and I'm here with two Miami bridge workers who have no idea where these cars are coming from. It's Camila Adams.
What the fuck?
And Robin Hitchcock.
I'm moving to Pittsburgh.
That was better. I think that was Too Fast, Too Furious, 48 and 2/3. Our updated Fast rankings, in first place, the original, the classic, The Fast and the Furious, with a 70. That wins the tiebreaker because Robin gave it an 85. Followed
Stand by it.
The first one?
Yeah.
Sure. It's, you know, it built kind of a genre.
I mean, it's basically Point Break, but with cars. What more could I want?
Yeah. Followed by Fate of the Furious, same score, 70, loses the tiebreaker. Too Fast, 48 and 2/3, way down there. This is not... the high point of the series.
No. And is it because of Vin? Because it's Vinless? Is that it? I hate to put it all on him, but is that it?
It's part of it.
It's a big movie for the human torso. There's a lot of Tyrese and Eva Mendes has her little bikini moment.
I will say, I enjoyed it more than I expected to. And I spoke with Liz, who again apologizes that she couldn't do the recap. You know what it's like.
Yeah.
She said, listen, even the worst Fast and Furious movie is a Fast and Furious movie. It's like, yep. Yeah.
It's like pizza. But now, 8 Mile, I'm so familiar with this movie. I know the final battle rap by heart.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if I had ever seen the first 15, 20 minutes or so.
Because you mentioned last week watching the compilation. Is that just your deal?
No, it was... I worked at the movie theater when this came out.
Oh!
And so this was kind of the 30-minute break movie for a whole month.
Yeah.
You know, especially if it was at the ending. But really, anywhere. What you didn't get all the time with that is the beginning. Because that's when you're doing the most stuff at the movie theater. When he's choking now, I don't know if I had ever seen that scene before.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
But I had fond memories of it, and they were rewarded. You two had you had both seen this, right?
Yeah, I think I went to the theater and saw this.
I also saw this in the theater, and I think it was the first time I went out to the Century 3 Mall Theater.
Really?
Yes, this was my first semester of college when this came out.
Was this when they were still doing the dollar movies?
I think so. So I can't remember so long ago. Also, I am losing my voice. I apologize. I don't understand what that's about.
Oh. Weather change.
Yeah, I remember liking it. I have not seen it since then.
I can't say that I have seen it very much, maybe twice in its existence.
Yeah.
I thought I had it on DVD, but I guess it was one of those that got purged at some point.
Right.
When I went to go watch it, I was like, oh, okay. But I was an Eminem fan and I still am. Yes, he is very problematic in some ways, but also it's all, I'm not going to get into it.
You don't have to get into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Last week when you were like, I apologize, I was like, what are you apologizing for? And then I started watching this movie, I was like, oh yeah.
It's not a good thing for the world, but I will say that the standards of problematic have been lowered. There's a whole class of people that 5 years ago we would have been like, I don't know. And now the borders shifted suddenly.
Right.
And we're like, I think Eminem's fine now.
Right. Yeah, exactly. He seems like he's a good person.
Yeah.
I mean, he's an old man, you know, he's a grown person and he has gone through a lot and he's sober. Right. So you're allowed to grow and change.
Right. Yeah. And also ironically, I think he has a documentary called Stan,
I think it's out.
Just released
right now.
Yeah, Tony.
Right. Because yeah. I think because it was like right after I finished watching this because I went ahead and bought it and then I switched up and I go to wherever else platform that I have and it's like, oh, Eminem's fit. I was like, is that Eminem? And it just stands. There's this picture there. So there's that. And there's also the connection with the rappers in movies, rapper actors. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. we just did the Too Fast and Too Furious. And also the third connection is that white boys that look into your soul with their eyeballs.
Is that complimentary?
I don't know. Like, because Eminem, like we, there's no secret that there's something not quite right with him. But there's also, like, when you look at his face, there's no secret. There's nothing, that there's something not quite right about. Like, behind those eyes. It's it's a little bit scary.
Right, like in another life, he was a military sniper.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well, and we talked about he was offered the Paul Walker role, or do I have this backwards?
I think you're saying it right. I think he was offered Paul Walker's role in Fast and Furious.
Really?
Yeah.
And he, you know, especially off of this, it was like, oh, he's going to go into acting now.
And he was like, no, thank you.
He just kind of, apparently he was offered the lead in Elysium.
What is that?
That Matt Damon?
We have an episode about that.
Exactly. Okay. That is what Elysium
is. God, I hate that movie. Right. That was one of Neil Blomkamp's several apartheid is bad, imagine that happening to white people movies.
So Eminem had the good sense. No, he was offered the lead in Jumper. Like every now and then. Wow. Someone's like,
did he ever do anything else?
I don't think so.
Only like versions of himself. Like he cameos in Funny People. Apparently he cameos in Happy Gilmore too, which I haven't seen yet.
I have seen, and I don't remember that. I saw it like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
There's, to be fair, it is a parade of cameos. Yeah. My favorite Letterboxd review of that was that it's a feature length Super Bowl ad.
That sounds right. He's pretty darn good.
I know. He really does what he needs to do in this film. And maybe that is why he stopped acting. Maybe he was like, I played myself correctly. And you're welcome. Bye.
That could be it. Also, it just, I don't know. No, it felt like with this movie that he took the craft seriously. And this is, and I don't know if it's just because this is like, quote unquote, his life story or... is that the only thing that only reason why he wanted to act is because he's telling his story? And
is it though?
I mean, it is, but it isn't. Like, it's like,
right,
you know, it's,
I don't, I was gonna say, like, you'll have to educate me. I have no idea how much of this is legit and how much of this is,
I mean, if anything,
the fable of Marshall Mathers.
It feels like this is a nicer version of what Marshall Mathers, of his life.
Okay.
A little bit. I mean, everything in here is in the vicinity of truth. But none of this is exactly right. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
You know, the places are correct, and just a lot of the details are, none of the details quite line up.
Okay.
Which is a little bit better, honestly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Reality is boring a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Although you are so right with your cold open comment. What was on the line?
Street cred?
The greatest currency of all.
Right.
Okay.
But I guess it's just, you know, but I'm going to like dig a little bit deeper in there and see, like, maybe it's just more about self-esteem, about the belief in himself. I think, and I appreciate that. Like, when you step away from, there was no big money prize. There was no contract. There was no, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's like what it's really about and what it really should be about is how you feel about yourself. Like, you shouldn't be doing all of these things and working this hard just because you want the dollar.
No, the
I mean, you're talking to a room full of podcasters and freelance artists and performers, right, so you are right.
Right.
Oh, but the primary villain is stage fright.
Yeah.
You know, like, the Free World guys are the secondary villain, but even the movie actually kind of establishes that, like, they want to beat you up, but they absolutely don't want to kill you.
Yeah.
Like in the I do love the fight scene where Cheddar Bob shoots himself in the leg. When he does that, they immediately stop fighting and go to, like, oh shit. Yeah,
as soon as
he takes the gun out, everybody's like, what are you doing? Yeah. Which I appreciate.
Right. Like, Womo, too far, guy. Yeah. Too far.
I don't want to get too sidetracked, but what sparked that fight?
There was, I don't know if it was that fight, but there was one fight where Eminem just stops the car, gets out, and punches a guy. And I was like, really, buddy?
Yeah, I think that's just it. Again, he's just fed up at that point. I think he's just looking for something to beat. There was, I forget what happened before that.
It seems so random.
I think it's because he saw Wink with them, and he thought that Wink was maybe on his team.
Mm.
But that one did feel very like, it's time for the fight now.
But you know, listen, guys, having been alive in 1995 and in this vicinity, I lived in like Michigan in Detroit area around 96, 97.
Oh, wow.
Around the same time that this is supposed to be taking place. Yes, this is just fucking stupid fights.
Yeah.
And beef in the hip hop and people that wanted to be in the hip hop world. And then I tell you, the amount of fucking dudes that I came across in my life was like, I won't be a rapper. Like, ugh.
Have you been to Chin Tiki? Because that's what I was most jealous of.
No, I have not been there. And then for a hot second, I was confused. Like, have I been to the shelter? But I was confusing it with St. Andrew's Hall.
Mm.
So I had not been to the shelter.
Well,
or I'm not even sure if it's like a new place, if it's an actual place.
I think it's supposed to, like everything else, it's like, this is pretty accurate, but it's changed slightly. For some of those details, here's Camila Adams with a 60-second recap of 8 Mile.
Somebody say go.
Yeah.
I thought you were about to put a beat on. I thought that we had a...
She gets 45 seconds to catch the beat.
Go.
Story about a white kid on the grind, lives in a trailer on the 8 Mile line. B-Rabbit's the name, dreams are stalled. Dead with a deadbeat mom feeling trapped in the walls. His crew, the 3 1/3, spit rhymes to feel alive, but in these streets you got a battle to survive. He chokes in the battle, stage frights a disease. Haters are laughing, feels weak in the knees. Works a factory job, feels like he's in a cage. Every night he's writing rhymes, expressing rage. He meets a girl named Alex, did he find a way out? She broke his trust, now he's filled with doubt. In the final battle, winner take all, up against Papa Doc. Ready to stand tall, he's first, he drops bombs, speaks truth to the crowd. About his trailer, his struggle, says it out loud. He disses himself, taking the power away. Calls Papa Clarence, leaving him nothing to say. Papa's got no words, just drops the mic and flees. B-Rap's the champ, walks off with respect and a moment of peace.
See, I knew it. I saw something in the way that you centered yourself that I was like, I think some bars are coming. I think.
Yeah. That was so good. Mm-hmm.
I tried to find a beat to do this too, but I waited too long to try to find it. So, but yeah.
One of B-Rabbit's moves is to do it a cappella, right? So.
Right.
And also, imagine the world where we didn't try to get Liz to do the recap last week. Camila did the recap last week, and then Sean had to recap this movie.
Yeah, no.
Would you have also wrapped it?
No, it's I know that a big part of this, the lesson here is don't assume that rap is only for one race. However, did I tell you both about the 23andMe?
No.
For fairly unmotivated reasons, I took a DNA test that tells you the thing. And I basically know where it's all coming from, but I'm curious because everyone I've ever talked to, there is a little mix, right? Mm. There's a little bit of unexpected something in there.
Surprise.
100% Northern European. I'm the only person I have ever heard of that does not have any flavoring whatsoever. It's a little band that starts in Ireland and ends in like Czechoslovakia and doesn't even get like Germany, like just there it is. So
look at you.
No, I would have calmly and arrhythmically described the plot. But great job.
Thanks.
It's not a plot heavy movie.
No.
And I kind of like it more. I actually think this is really good.
Yeah, so do I, and I'm surprised. One of the things that I liked so much about this movie is that it all feels like things that could have really happened, which, like, that was sort of why I was like, I have no idea how real this is,
right.
Because this seems like something in a normal person's normal life,
right.
And it just happens to be about someone who became extremely famous.
Right.
That's really interesting.
And to go back to, like, that now really big, bright, shiny payoff. Like at the end, he's just like, I'm going back to work.
Yeah.
He just goes back to work and it's like, bet. Because it's also real. It's like the win after he's done if he wins the battle, and then his boys are just like, yeah, now we got bitches and Benjamins and whatever. It's like, who? No, you know. Like, what are you talking about? And then old dude is like, now you can host with me. And it's like, really? That's supposed to be the shiny bright prize here?
I mean, again, you really reframed this whole thing for me as somebody who does comedy for free all the time. I'm like, yes, wow, that would be really exciting for me.
That's why I think it's good, because it's a really interesting genre blend where it's partially like a movie about art, because it's not about fame, it's not about, you know, it's partially a sports movie,
right?
Because it is like, I need to redeem and win the big game.
It's Rocky with bars.
But then it's also mostly just kind of like a hangout slice of life, you know?
Yeah, so it's like you're like the underdog coming of age.
Yeah.
Kind of musical tale or whatever. And another thing that helps to add to that is I love the score. Mm-hmm. Every time we see like his scrap papers of the lyrics and stuff, there's like the unfinished score.
Yes.
Or the lyrics on it. Oh, that's
we talked about this a little bit with Where the Wild Things Are. I love when the original song becomes a part of the score, and that's done so well here. Yeah.
Apparently those are the real pieces of paper that he wrote down the lyrics to Lose Yourself, and they sold at auction later, and they're pictured in the film. What was I actually about to pivot on? I got distracted by paper. Well, anyway, November 8th, 2002 was the release date for 8 Mile, the 31st number one movie of the year. Made $51.2 million. Didn't have big competition. Brian De Palma's Femme Fatale with...
does not exist.
Rebecca Romijn.
Doesn't exist.
In the lead. Rebecca Romijn and Antonio Banderas, I think, was in ninth, debuted in ninth with $2.7 million. But just a 1 week number one movie in America, because Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets came out the following week and made $116 million. Or rather, 8 Mile made $116 million total. That was 23rd for 2002. It was the top R-rated movie of the year. And at the time, it was in about the top 30 or so R-rated movies
ever.
Mm. That's now it's not in the top 100 because
making more R-rated movies.
There was a truism in the 20th century that you made so much less money with an R-rated movie because the movies were all families and you had to have, you know, everyone could be able to go together. That's shifted. But at the time, that was a lot. At the time, the $51.2 million opening was the second largest opening ever for an R-rated movie behind only Hannibal. So,
oh, wow.
That shift was happening. Expensive Baubles.
Expensive Baubles.
This one, Best Original Song, Eminem, Oscar winner.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
I didn't realize that.
And he wasn't there.
I think I remember him in an interview talking about how he declined because it's not his place or something.
He thought, yeah, I mean, I think Eminem legitimately didn't know that Best Original Song is a significant Oscar. Because, like, equivalent things at the Grammys aren't, you know, best song for visual media.
Oh, I see.
You know, I think he thought it was like the Grammys and there's a bunch of little awards that aren't on the...
Yeah.
But he also very well may have thought he wasn't going to win.
Mm. I was going to say, I don't really know. I know Chicago had an original song. Don't know what song it was.
Well, he had just lost the Globe to U2.
Oh, the hands that built America.
For their song from Gangs of New York.
Ridiculous.
And it wasn't stacked, but it was close. There was an original song from Chicago. Paul Simon had a song from the Wild Thornberries movie.
Adorable.
Which is pretty good. So like between U2, a big musical, and a good Paul Simon song.
Sure.
There was something from Frida. But I think he didn't think he was going to win and didn't, you know.
Interesting.
So he went back 17 years later and performed at the 2020 Oscars. Immediately pre-COVID. That's the one that
the week
snuck
before.
In. Yeah. Well, first, the other reason why he thought he might not be winning is because this was the first hip hop song to win.
I was just
going to
say.
Song. There have
wasn't
only...
it like one of, or if not the first one nominated?
It might be.
I
couldn't think of what.
I mean, it would also depend on how you're defining hip hop.
Sure. There have only been two since. 3-6 Mafia, famously, for Hustle and Flow.
One of the best Oscar substances ever.
Oh, it's fantastic. And well-deserved.
Yes, that could have been you, Eminem.
Song kind of made the movie. And if you count John
Justice
Legend...
Justice for Dolly Parton, sorry.
John Legend featuring Common for Selma,
yes.
I think?
Oh, yeah.
Don't that you remember one? Chris Pine crying? The song's called Glory.
Chris Pine, they cut to a weeping Chris Pine. Correct. In the audience. That's nice.
To be fair, it's a beautiful song.
No, it is. I'm sure it's
But it just became like the emblematic image of performative white tears.
Right, yeah. Like, I know, I'm just left with so many. It's like, okay, Chris.
Did that get John Legend the EGOT? Was that number four?
No, I'm pretty sure, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure it was an Emmy.
Okay.
It was something because Chrissy Teigen posted a thing where like her dad was texting her random stuff and she was like, I'm at the Emmys. John's going to EGOT tonight. And he was like, but I need to know. So whichever award show it was. Yeah.
It also won the Critics' Choice Award for Best Original Song, won the Grammy for Best Rap Song, and the Grammy for Best Male Rap Solo Performance.
Mm. Grammys are so silly.
Those are two of Eminem's 15 Grammys.
You basically just said the same thing, like three, like this.
Yeah.
I will never, ever understand the difference between Song of the Year and Record of the Year.
No one
knows.
It should be combined. However, Song of the Year is the written song.
Okay.
Think of Song of the Year as the
best original
music.
Song. Okay. That's also what best original yes. song is. Best original song writing.
Record of the Year Oscars. Is a recording. Think of the single as Record of the Year, and the sheet music is okay. Song of the Year.
Okay. In the gotcha. Same way that I never learned the difference between sound and sound effects editing, I will never, or whatever the many different two sound Oscars were, I will never learn the difference between song and record.
And somehow this lost both of them. Even with Eminem's 15 Grammys, none of them are the big. It's big four, right? Record, album, song, and best new artist. Eminem has never won any of those. It lost Song of the Year to Luther Vandross, and Record of the Year to Coldplay or Clocks.
So, that's one of the good Coldplay songs, to be fair.
I don't think that's one of the good Coldplay. Okay. I think that's one of the bad Coldplay songs.
Oh, interesting.
I think everyone in the world has three Coldplay songs where they're like, that one's okay.
Yeah, you're so right. Yeah.
But I don't like them, you know. somehow it lost the Song for Visual Media Grammy.
Oh.
To A Mighty Wind from A Mighty Wind.
Oh, cute.
It's cute that A Mighty Wind has a Grammy, but... Eminem was the subject of a four-year consideration campaign for Best Actor.
Okay, I thought he was good, but let's not be ridiculous.
Yeah, let's calm down. Yeah. This is a guy with potential is what I'm seeing on screen here.
It's etched in my mind that an early, I can't remember if it was Rolling Stone or Entertainment Weekly. I think it was Rolling Stone, that a very early in the year, what are the Oscar movies, had a caricature of Eminem and Jack Nicholson pulling an Oscar back and forth. Like, that is etched in my mind for some
Jack Nicholson for About Schmidt?
About Schmidt, yeah.
Which I believe in my heart he would have won for if Katharine Hepburn had not made calls from her deathbed to be like, no, I will be the only four-time winner.
That's the thing. This was a really loaded year. The 10 nominees at the Globes, drama, comedy, are Jack Nicholson, Adrian Brody in The Pianist, who went on to win the Oscar, Daniel Day-Lewis for Gangs of New York, Leonardo DiCaprio in Catch Me If You Can, Michael Caine in The Quiet American, Nicolas Cage in Adaptation, Richard Gere in Chicago, Adam Sandler in Punch Drunk Love, and the two...
Wow!
Yeah.
Really good year for male actors, right. Which we don't get a lot of.
The two that are on the fringe, but are still very good, are Kieran Culkin in Igby Goes Down.
Oh, he's so good in that movie.
And Hugh Grant in About a Boy. The Oscars went... Good. The Oscars went Adrian Brody, Nicolas Cage, Michael Caine, Daniel Day-Lewis, and Jack. So, like, even after that, Adam Sandler for Punch Drunk Love was left out. Right. Leonardo was left out. Eminem was never going to be close. Some people are like, well, he made the Academy voters uncomfortable because he was controversial. It's like, it just wasn't all that close.
I mean, maybe that was a factor for some of the votes that he would have gotten that would have put him in 12th place.
Right, exactly. This actually was like sort of barely conceived before Eminem. Brian Grazer, the super producer of the time, wanted to do basically a hip hop Saturday Night Fever.
Okay. I mean, that's really good movie producer logic.
Right. And that was a nugget of the idea until he saw Eminem on TV and was like, okay, this is how
I can do it with a white person.
Yeah, pretty much. Danny Boyle and Tarantino were both considered to direct.
You know, I just rewatched Trainspotting. And mm-hmm. that makes sense.
But Eminem liked Curtis Hanson. Eminem met with Curtis Hanson and talked about his appreciation for L.A. Confidential and The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Oh, wow.
And they bonded.
I just love that Eminem watched The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Sure.
was like, that was great, man.
Right.
You got to remember, the VHS era was short, right?
All right.
It was like 88 to 2000. And so if a movie just was big for a minute, like, you know how many people, I haven't seen Dances with Wolves, but every house had a Dances with Wolves right. tape. I'd probably like Dances with
you
Wolves.
You would love Dances yeah. with Wolves. I've never seen it. You should watch the extended version of Dances with Wolves and have a nice day in the West.
It's got to be 4 hours long.
Oh, it's at least 4 hours long.
Here's the thing I didn't know. The 2015 movie Southpaw was written as the sequel to 8 Mile.
I knew that, but and Eminem is heavy on the soundtrack.
Hang on,
for Southpaw.
I'm confused. What is Southpaw about? Because I thought it was about a boxer.
It's about a boxer fighting to get his daughter back, and it was going to posit
is Eminem a boxer.
Hopefully, with the supercharged prelude to Southpaw, that somewhere in between
Turbocharged
B Rabbit had stopped rapping and started boxing, and it was going to be the same character, the same world, just a completely different subject matter.
And also that was what 2015.
Yes.
You said okay. Wow.
And then eventually someone said,
what are we doing?
Wait,
here?
No, why? Just call Jake Gyllenhaal, get this done. And I always struggle to remember which one Proof is. Proof is the rapper that came up with Eminem. They were childhood friends. They went to different high schools, but Eminem would go to Proof's high school to do rap battles at lunch.
I was like, Proof is the one with Gwyneth Paltrow.
Future
what? That's a movie, guys.
The movie.
One of our listeners probably gave me a light chuckle at that. I say thank you.
Anthony Hopkins is in it.
Okay.
It's based on a play. When I was in college,
that play was super popular.
Every acting class did scenes from Proof or scenes from Doubt, and so I get those two movie adaptations crossed. Proof is both the basis for the character Future. Proof is also the first rapper, the rapper who wins the battle where Eminem chokes. Yeah. That's Proof.
That's cool.
Also, I think he was in Eminem's other group, D12.
Yeah, who are all over the soundtrack. I tried to listen to a little bit of the soundtrack. There's a lot of good people on it. The only times it really works is when Eminem's alone.
Mm. Yeah.
There's like three tracks that are just Eminem, and they're by far the best.
Exactly.
It felt like Nas is there and Rakim is there and Jay-Z is there, and it feels that like that soundtrack thing where it's like, here's a track I didn't use. Yeah. This one didn't make the cut, but sure, go ahead.
See if you could find a good home for this guy.
Also, 50 Cent is all over it. I don't like him.
I'm not a fan. Like, I'm a fan of him as probably a person, the more I learn about him, but like there's one or two songs that's just, I don't understand why. He was such a...
He had to get rich or die trying.
I don't understand why he was able to.
It's just kind of boring, right? Yeah. He's just not an interesting... that.
You deserve to crack yourself up over that one.
I think this is kind of remarkable. I mean, I'm not going to give it the highest score ever because... You know, the female characters, oh boy.
Okay.
So unnecessary.
Well, you know what is necessary? That sex scene.
Okay, that's good.
Was it?
Okay, this is what I like about this sex scene. It's top to bottom. And they figured out how, Colin pointed this out, that they figured out the only way you could achieve a sex scene like that in a film is to make it a quickie. Mm-hmm. And they figured out how to make it a quickie without making it seem like really unsatisfying and unpleasant for the woman, at least, by making it all like the thrill of we're doing this at work amongst the heavy machinery. Mm-hmm. And I think it's hot.
I think I was just distracted by the fact that they're doing this at work amongst the heavy machinery.
It's not
like,
safe.
There's like 50 ways you can die right now.
Yes, OSHA violations all over the place.
There's so much focus on he's got to be on the straight and narrow at work and, you know, act right and be. unless someone's trying to fuck, then goes right out the window.
I do also think Academy Award winner Kim Basinger is really good. She's, you can tell that she just won an Oscar for a movie directed by the same guy. And so she is taking some big swings that maybe she doesn't completely connect with. But I like the way that her character and also Brittany Murphy's character are written. So it's like Eminem is mean to them, but he doesn't not respect them. Like, respect is a complicated word for his mother. He loves his mother, but doesn't respect her.
Right.
And he respects Brittany Murphy, even though he doesn't really treat her very well. He gets upset with her for having sex with someone else, which is basically none of his business. But also very understandable, right? A lot of people react that way to those kind of things.
But still, it's just like, there was at no point were they like, no. He asked her out for on a date, and she's like, let's just go fuck back here real quick.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's just kind of like, at what point you're like, yeah, she's totally my girlfriend.
Yeah,
like,
no, that was dumb.
Like, sixth grade logic, stop.
Max agrees. Yeah. Max just growled. I don't know if that was Mike. He's like, don't do that to Brittany Murphy.
Max.
Yeah.
But
she had a special talent. Damn it.
I miss her. Max is. But I do think the way that their relationship ends with just the like, I'm going to come see you tonight and then I'm going to fuck off forever and I'm going to flip you off on the way out the door, I think was really but lovingly flip you off.
No. Yeah. I mean,
it's nice.
I like what she brought, what they did with it.
Yeah.
Like, just, but it's still, it kind of just felt forced and unnecessary. Like, I don't think we needed to know anything. We didn't need to see his ex-girlfriend. We didn't need to see
poor Taryn Manning.
Poor Taryn Manning.
Like, y'all brought her all the way out here for this.
Yeah. Like, Taryn Manning cannot catch a break in movies. She's just or television. She is just always the butt of the joke, and it's like except for in Crossroads.
It's because her body's smaller than her head. It's hard not to. She's very attractive, but like her head is regular size and her body is not.
Okay, so this is Colin's whole like framework for the film, is that Eminem is just trying to make himself seem cool in all corners. And like, I was like, but he's showing himself off to be like such a hothead and like making these stupid choices. And Colin's like, stupid but cool. Anyway, so part of that is that he has to have a woman, right? That's why, I think.
Yeah. I mean, we'll never also, know. It's not our call.
Also, yeah. She's hot in it.
Yeah,
I want that flippy hair to come back.
I would have gone among the piles of debris and, yeah. My job? What job? Never mind. Here we go. And I didn't watch the documentary. And we still don't know exactly why she died.
Oh, we still don't know.
Not exactly.
That's so bizarre.
What was it, like, either drugs or?
No, it wasn't drugs. She had pneumonia or something. Like, she had some kind of respiratory illness.
That's right. And there was like something in her house.
Well, that's the thing, is that her partner died of under similar circumstances in the same home, like within a short amount of time.
Yeah.
But there's no, as far as I know, they've never solved the case.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
She was, I don't know how to describe what she brings. I mean, she's very believable, even in a setting where she's the most attractive person for 50 miles in every direction.
She acts like it, though. But like, to me, that's complimentary.
She does act like that, and it's just always she's always got this look like she's trying to seduce you.
She knows her power,
yeah,
and she's using it
right.
And between Kim Basinger and Charlize a few years later in Monster, this was a big era for, you're one of the most attractive women alive. We are going to strip that down and make you still attractive, right, but in a different way.
Like Trailer Park.
Did not know that you still found Charlize attractive in Monster.
Good. Oh, sure.
You. Okay.
I mean, it's different, yeah, certainly, but if she walked into the fire hall, you'd be like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah. And Michael Shannon, surprisingly.
Right.
I totally forgot.
No memory of Michael Shannon being in this. Also, no. He is younger than Eminem.
What?
I know.
My brain was trying to like, okay, is he supposed to be like her young lover? Because it's Michael Shannon. Right. There's no such thing as young Michael Shannon.
Right, exactly.
He exists for one moment, and it's in the film Groundhog Day when he goes to WrestleMania.
Oh.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
No, I know he's in Groundhog Day, but I'm trying to reconcile that with him being the young guy 15 years later in 8 Mile.
It's just 10 years later. But 10 still.
Years later. God, he's weird.
Yes.
He acts weird. He ages weird.
But I love it.
He is weird.
From what I've heard in real life, he is.
Well, didn't you remember, like, there was a YouTube video about him dramatically reading some pissed off sorority girl's letter?
Oh, God. I don't need that in my life. That sounds like I'd be like, oh, I'll cut in a clip. No, I won't. I'm scared. You can go look it up if you want to.
Amazing.
He legit terrifies me.
I'm not saying who I'm quoting, but I'm quoting someone who said directly to me, I played darts with that guy. He's a dick. So, just keep that in mind.
And I've told you the story, right? I'm cutting this. But I heard third hand that he a out of someone's.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yikes.
And
Does that weird that I want to mean it more?
And shout out to Evan Jones, who never gets shouted out. He's really...
Cheddar Bob?
Cheddar Bob is...
Yeah, I know.
I was like, what do I know him from? And the answer is one episode of every single TV show.
Right.
I know. When Mekhi Phifer's like, fuck the free world. And he's like, yeah, fuck the free world. I laughed so hard.
Freedom said it. Our future said it.
Also, like... Again, Eminem making himself look cool. I love he was like, here's my idiot friend who makes me look smart. Like, pop star when he has a short guy stand next to him so right. that he looks tall.
Right.
It's an important part of the friend group.
Have you seen the thing about that little thing that Anthony Mackie was talking about, the final battle rap?
No.
Is that apparently... At some point, M came to him while they were filming and was like, you know, like before they shot that scene, he was like, you know, it doesn't make any sense that our characters are beefing, which, yes, it doesn't, like, the audience doesn't really get that either. But he's like, you know, I need something, you know, whatever. So they sit and they chit chat for about an hour and they're like, okay, break. And they go back to, and when they go to film, the stuff that M is saying to him, Clarence, about the private school and his parents being a good job, this is stuff Anthony told him. While they were chit-chatting about himself.
Oh, my God. Wow.
And so he wasn't expecting that. So, like, Cranbrook is not an actual school, but he did go to, Cranbrook was something else.
Oh, my
gosh. Nobody else really knows what it is, but yeah.
Wow.
An hour of prep time for Eminem is a year for most of us, because that's the final battle is perfect.
Right.
But the whole sequence... where he demolishes the first guy. The second one, it's kind of close.
Like I would have voted for the other guy in the second one.
It's up in the air.
I mean, like, his criticism is valid. He was like, you're being repetitive. But he also was repetitive really well.
Yes.
Apparently, that is extensively based on, look this up on YouTube. Early Eminem traveled to the 1997 Los Angeles Rap Olympics and was trying to, like, make that this is what's going to make it for me. But more importantly, the prize is $500 and I need that to fly home.
Wow.
And he went up against, like, the local hero, and apparently they added 5 additional rounds because it was so close. But in the end, the crowd gave it to the local guy.
Wow.
I'm sorry, I'm forgetting his name. The point of this guy is not go on to anything. And there are interviews where he's like, I blew the $500 at the bar that night.
Oh, oh man. So how did Eminem get home? That should be the sequel to 8 Mile.
Right. The supercharged prelude to I know people Too Fast, Too Furious, everything, including the upcoming Tuco, but I'm going to start saying the supercharged prelude to everything because that's the best title.
Isn't it turbocharged prelude?
Turbocharged. Thank you.
If you're going to make a reference no one's going to get, you're going to get it right.
I should remember because the ride at Universal is Fast and Furious Turbocharged. In any case, I don't know. I just like it a lot. 78?
Oh my gosh, that's my number too.
Okay. Wow. just because I still stand by that, we didn't really need either one of the love interests. 75.
Good movie, guys.
77 is the score. I thought about going higher. I did then go, oh yeah, it kind of, nothing really happens and it's a little bit longer than it has to be. And the love interest, but.
At one point I thought about deducting 1 point for every time they used the F slur, but I didn't want to have to count.
It's, I don't know how far we can get into this, but this, it felt like part, that whole scene, which is good with Exhibit and the, you know, when he's defending the gay guy at the lunch truck, it felt like, because remember, this was a point at the time, like Eminem was really trying to insist, because actually Eminem is a vocal supporter of gay rights,
right? Mm-hmm.
That he was trying to insist that it's like, yeah, the slur has nothing to do.
No, nope.
And
he's, not your decision to make. Pal.
He has since given up on that. Good. But I did feel like that scene was a little bit like, here, I will demonstrate.
Yeah, it's too much.
Like, he's trying to make himself look good.
Yeah.
Well, it was too much. I mean, I get like a couple, like the one line that he did was like, he may be gay, but you're a whatever.
Yeah. Mm. That's his doctrine.
That should have been it right there.
Right.
If that's what where he wanted to go, but it really went on too long.
But I like that Paul came back and covered for him for a few hours at work when he went to the battle. That was nice.
Yes.
That was a nice character. It's a pretty good. I checked to see if I had any notes that I left out, and it was just, why were our pants so big?
They're big again, or ladies' pants are.
He was sitting on the bus with his legs up. It was like he had a poncho over him. Those are just pants.
I wrote so few notes. I just wrote down. White noise went through my head during the scene with nine people in the car. I was like, this isn't safe. And long live the going out top.
Oh yeah. It's like a nice top and some jeans.
Yes, that was a good look, and we should try to bring it back somehow.
Yeah.
To the bingo card, I got nothing. I mean,
okay, listen, hear me out. Is a rap battle inherently a one at a time fight?
No. Okay. I mean, not what I meant. No.
You are the bingo czar, czarina, so
we only missed movie in one of your home states by about 20 miles.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I don't see anything.
Nope.
That's a shame.
We didn't talk about the trailer.
Ah.
When I feel blue, don't know what to do, I look at you, and I just say...
Deal at that Little Caesars over in Warren?
Nah, I'm down in New Detroit stamping now.
He got fired from a pizza place.
Well, at least I got a job.
Up! Down!
You ever wonder at what point you gotta stop living up here and start living down here?
Look.
Hey, Ray!
All right, come on, man. How you feeling?
If you had one shot.
I'm saving up enough cash to get out of this place.
One opportunity.
I'm on my way. I'm taking you with me.
Seize everything you ever wanted.
If something's gonna happen, it needs to happen now.
Did you capture
it? It's my boy, Bunny Rabbit. He's a genius.
Just let it slip.
What are you doing with your life that's so great?
You better lose it now. In the music, the moment you own it, you better never let it go.
8 miles. Every moment is a chance to turn it around.
I have a feeling about you. You're
going to
be great.
They're calling your name. You better rise.
Not great.
Doesn't make it seem...
It makes it seem like a worse movie than it is.
Yeah. It's more... I mean, I can tell why they made it the way they did. They were like, Eminem!
That's all you need, right?
Right? We have Eminem! Eminem for sale!
Eminem!
But like, when you think about the things that actually make this movie good, none of them are really represented in the trailer.
I have a question. Was Mekhi Phifer a star?
I mean, ish. I knew who he was because he's so hot.
Yeah, ish. You know, like the, he was definitely a star in the Black Hollywood.
Okay.
Part of the, I would say he was part of the Black Pack
in
like the late 90s movies.
Who else is in that?
Let's see, Blair Underwood.
Yeah.
Morris Chestnut.
So hot.
Nia Long.
Just naming attractive people.
That's what we had, bro. That's what we had.
It felt, in retrospect, it feels like you only needed the names Eminem, Kim Basinger, and Brittany Murphy on the poster.
Mm-hmm.
Like
he didn't even need Kim Basinger, quite frankly.
She just won an Oscar.
It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. We rambled so long before getting to Camila last week, so you're kicking it off.
Actually, I don't think I've watched anything.
Never mind. Yeah,
peeling back the curtain, we're recording only a week after our last episode because of scheduling stuff, so.
Yeah, and I was like, I've been catching up on all the true crime docs that I couldn't watch while my child was home.
I was going to ask you, I was like, should we do Robin and Camila's True Crime Corner?
Please.
Because I don't have a lot to talk about either.
Oh, I did finally fucking watch John Wick from front to back.
I saw it, you're letterboxed.
For how long has this movie been? For 10 years I've been trying to watch this bitch. And I finally made it to the end.
Good for you.
Totally, yeah. I get it. I get why. There's so many sequels. keep this train going.
Yeah.
That's it.
All right. Well, I tried. I tried to submit to you first.
I appreciate that. Why are we looking at?
Because you're going to be on mic with that thing.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
It's so hot.
I know.
Sounds like you started blending a really small smoothie. Just a faint. So, Robin.
Okay. Well, do we want to talk about Honey Don't? I literally went to the theater yesterday because I'm like, I got to have something to talk about and You Can't Handle the Truth. Maybe going to the movies will fix my soul. And it sure didn't.
That's a bad movie.
Yeah.
What happened?
Why? Okay. Literally, why is it not set in the 70s?
I don't know.
Like, why go through all of that trouble and have a cell phone ringing in your first scene? Like, what?
From what I can tell, he and his wife, because somebody called me out and was like, you're saying this is all him, but his wife co-wrote it. It's not entirely. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to drag her into this mess.
Oh, I'm dragging her.
He and his wife are apparently doing a trilogy of lesbian pulp movies.
Which sounds so good on paper.
I liked Driveaway Dolls a lot.
So this is supposed to be part of that trilogy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like you did kind of the same thing a year later with some of the same cast.
It's a less I did not think Driveaway Dolls was particularly good, but the pieces gelled together a lot better in that. Like, mm-hmm. That was sort of this is a throwaway movie that I enjoyed, and this was a throwaway movie that felt junky.
Yeah. Look, I hate to undercut my own. We all know that I am all for
lesbian pulp
sex scenes, even gratuitous sex scenes. There are too many. There is so much of this. It's so much that I'm like, you definitely just wanted to see them fuck. You definitely were like, can I make Margaret Qualley and Aubrey Plaza fuck and be in the room? Like, it felt that. There's one scene where they're lying in bed talking about their lives that is almost a good scene, only Aubrey Plaza's one pierced nipple is right at the bottom of the screen, and so the whole scene, I'm just looking at that, and then 5 minutes later, I'm like, what were they talking about?
It wasn't that interesting.
Well, I mean, you know, it's something new. Something we haven't seen on the screen before, to my, I don't know, I don't follow her that closely. But it felt, I wrote in my review, it felt like at the beginning of a New York to LA flight, someone said, you think you can write a script by the end of this? Because it's just like, fuck, Cohen's stuff, people are murdering, they don't know why, there's an evil preacher, and sex, sex, sex. Okay, here it is. It's not good.
No, bad movie.
Margaret Qualley's kind of good, but like, it's not one of the ones that shows why she's a star.
Yeah. And I caught up with The Monkey, which I enjoyed. I thought Theo James was like really good in it.
Yeah.
But the people, the like Final Destination-y deaths where it's like a long setup and then the payoff worked a lot better for me than the someone randomly explodes deaths. And it's like 50-50. So I
your
got a little tired of it.
Your body doesn't explode thing. Because you touch water with electricity.
That was dumb. Yeah, like there, I said out loud during the movie, this is dumb, like 8 times, and yet ultimately came away with like, okay, yeah, you did what you had to do.
Yeah, no, I had a good time.
Yeah.
I appreciated those drawn out sex scenes.
I was like, really?
I appreciated the crazy exaggerated death scenes.
Yeah.
More for the reaction that Theo was giving his reaction to, like, the person blowing up. Like, yeah, that was the mwah for me.
That makes sense. And then I watched Opus. Have either of you seen that?
Not yet. I keep wanting to. Oh, not so much.
I mean, I'm not going to say don't watch it because it's incredibly interesting, but it is a failure in my opinion. And the problem is it's one of those movies, it's first time filmmaker, and I don't know who they are. But it's clear that they are like, this is my only chance. Here's every idea I've ever had.
Oh,
and
God.
It's just like, oh, settle down. Settle down and make one movie at a time. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Wait, which one is Opus?
It's the one with Ayodele Beery, and she is on like it's like a writer's retreat for.
Oh, the John Malkovich one?
Yes.
Okay. I remember that coming out and the reviews were like that. And I was like, I'm just not going to bother.
I was definitely. I don't want to, entertained isn't the right word, and it wasn't quite riveting, but it, you know.
Held your attention?
It held my attention in a way that is sometimes hard to do, so I have to give it that. And the original songs, they write bad songs on purpose, and I think that that is really interesting and impressive, and they do an excellent job with that.
Nice.
I haven't seen much else. I watched Eenie Meenie on Hulu. Because I needed a second review and ended up not even really reviewing it. So what was the point? Do you remember the last episode when I talked about how Night Always Comes was a good exception to the action movie formula that grounded it in reality instead of being about secret hitmen? Mm-hmm. Eenie Meenie is the opposite of that.
I see. I did start Night Only Comes. Wow, bleak.
Oh, yeah. Very, very bleak. I mean, it's worth it, but it has a really good cast. Samara Weaving,
I love her.
She's so good, and she is quickly becoming, she's entering that territory that's like, why aren't you more famous? She's famous.
It's because of what, like, Babylon nailed it. She is poor man's Margot Robbie.
But that's a very useful thing to be.
I guess so. Yeah, she should be getting more of her cast offs.
Why are all her posters just like in red?
Oh, you're looking at her letterbox right now?
Okay, yeah, ready or not.
Also, the Letterboxd app updated while we were recording, and I'm shaken.
No, it's been rolling out over the last few days. Like, people keep tweeting or skeeting, what happened to Letterboxd? And it has yet to make it to me.
I haven't seen it yet.
Diary, what's happening? Somehow Randall Park is in both Night Always Comes and Eenie Meenie, but Andy Garcia is good in it. Steve Zahn is good in it. Mike O'Malley is kind of good in it. I watched this a week ago and I couldn't tell you what happens. She's got a dumb boyfriend and she has to one big score to get him out of trouble with the, I don't know. It's a thing you can watch. And last night, Downton Abbey, the grand finale. I was so delighted by this. I have not watched the show. I think I'm going to start.
So wait, you just watched the finale?
You've seen the other, this is the third film.
I've seen this, I don't think I saw the first film. I saw the second film.
Okay.
So I have watched the last 4 hours of this story and nothing preceding. I don't know. People are nice and polite and quiet, and I really needed that right now. It's just, this is a good kind of escapism. It's a nice, they're dressed nice and they're in nice rooms.
I'm having tea.
I know, it's so.
AMC Theaters do a like special be quiet during the movie with the cast of a upcoming film. So, like, earlier in the year, it was like, Stitch tears apart the theater. Don't be like Stitch. Be quiet during your movie and come see Lilo and Stitch, right? Downton Abbey has one that's going on right now. And I'm like, that just doesn't seem like the extra promo material kind of film.
Here's the interesting. I'm mostly, this is our house divided. Robin is mostly AMC. I am mostly Cinemark. Cinemark has one that's like, if you're watching Thunderbolts on a screen this small, you're not getting the whole picture. And it's like, don't watch things on your TV. And there's one of those for Downton Abbey. And I'm like,
wait a second.
It's a TV show.
Right.
It's a PBS TV show. It comes in on a blurry channel. And I kind of, I mean, one of my reactions to this is actually this is very cinematic. It's all giant, you know, buildings and beautiful spaces, and like it works really well on the screen. But who's going hard on the Downton Abbey promo?
Wow. No,
I don't know.
Did they have any idea that that show would just take off the way that it did?
Absolutely not. I mean, that show was a phenomenon.
Yeah,
and it's hard to remember as we're talking about why does their movie get extra promo? Because it's like the people who still care.
Yeah. I think I'm going to start watching. And I don't watch TV, but I proposed to Mary Beth that every Saturday morning we should get up and make tea and watch one Downton Abbey. And
that's such a good idea.
That'll last a year. There's like 52 and then the movies.
That's such cute. A good idea.
I don't really want to do that. It's only a week later. I'm still playing Red Dead Redemption 2 for 3 hours a day and not watching movies. I'm sorry.
Wait, I have a true crime corner. Trophy Wife on Hulu.
I haven't finished it.
Oh yet. My gosh! But it's set in Pittsburgh.
I know. That's why I'm watching it.
Dentistry is where I used to park when we recorded at iHeart.
Oh my god!
So if you live in Pittsburgh and you can tolerate a kind of low production value, kind of trashy true crime show,
and that's surprising. That was like, what the fuck? And the amount. What's really bugging me and why it's taking me so long to finish it is the shots of the dead game. Can we not?
Oh, it's so unnecessary. Right? Yeah.
Like animals?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a big game
hunter.
The
guy was a hunter.
You couldn't play Red Dead Redemption 2. You're shooting big game all the time. Oh, and the Letterboxd list, by the way, scary movie references. Every movie that is parodied in some form in the scary movie franchise. Ooh. This is a 91 film list.
Wow.
An extensive 8 Mile parody in Scary Movie 3. Let's draw a movie. Okay, I don't know this, but it's 1987's The Secret of My Success.
Ooh, Michael J. Fox.
Oh, fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good, because I just did the Back to the Future trilogy, and I've never seen it.
Nice.
I'm just glad to be out of the early 2000s.
Yeah.
The beats, the pants, it was too much. Cars that were very low to the ground for some reason. Okay, great. Well, we'll do that. Hey, what was the number one song in America when 8 Mile
was
came out?
Was it Lose Yourself?
Yeah, it was Lose Yourself. What else was going to happen? This isn't...
Well,
this,
usually it doesn't work like that. You know,
they were smart enough this time to release the song, Get Your Attention. Right. They should always do it that way.
Yeah.
It works.
And it's really, like, I know obviously Lose Yourself is really good.
No, but it's
like,
so good.
This was his first number one for very good reason. Like, this is kind of indelible.
Yeah. It's an Oscar-winning song for a good reason. Mm-hmm.
It is weird that he named the restaurant Mom's Spaghetti.
I didn't know that. Yuck.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He has a restaurant in Detroit called Mom's Spaghetti.
Yuck.
Because like, you haven't given it enough, like, it wasn't glowing recommendations that Mom's Spaghetti.
No. If any, it's hey, you won't keep this down. Come on over to Mom's Spaghetti.
We have extra shirts.